out a nervous laugh, looking even more confused. Okay, good. I've eaten too much candy. Let's go brush our teeth. Isabel expected it, but she was still shocked when Eve dragged her into one of the shower rooms and started up a shower to drown out their conversation. Now, tell me what you actually meant, she demanded, gripping Isabel's arms. Exactly what I said. Isabel frowned. I know his scent. Not his deodorant, but him. I know it's not really a Sigma thing. It's exclusively an Alpha thing. Eve reared back, looking like she was on the verge of passing out, her next words almost a whisper. Or a mate bond thing? Hold up. Isabel laughed nervously, shaking her hands between them. That's not his eyes. And it's not just him. I know lots of people's scents. What's mine? Eve shoved out her arm, pushing her wrist beneath Isabel's nose. Isabel sniffed, suddenly unsure. Moisturizer? Candy? She spent a lot of time with Eve, and the other girl actually didn't have a distinctive scent. Jesus fucking Christ! Eve started pacing. That's just my moisturizer and the candy I ate. Who else's scents do you know that you're sure of? Well... She stalled, her frown deepening, her heartbeat kicking into overdrive. I guess all of the Alphas? All of them? Eve stalled, her mouth falling open. Are you sure? Yeah. I mean, the smells are kind of weird, like they wouldn't be deodorant or soap or anything. Except maybe Theo's or Spade's. Now Isabel was starting to panic, because it was far too easy to distinguish each individual scent in her memory, even the ones she had only managed to decipher once or twice. Easton smells like a storm. Professor Easton? Eve choked, her face pale. Did this all start before your death phase, or after? Before, but it got stronger. Why is it important? Because it's one of the extra alpha senses that some gifted mates get. Like how alphas all have extra strength and speed, and some anchors will magically show supernatural strength or speed if they need to protect their tether. Only alphas can scent people, but some bonded can do it, probably because it helps them know what their mate is thinking or feeling through the variations of their scent. Right. Isabel scratched the back of her neck, hoping she wasn't about to make a mistake. I should tell you something. What color had remained now sapped from Eve's face with every word as Isabel went through the actual events leading up to her death phase. The only things she left out were Theodore, Moses, and Easton's illegal abilities. Do you think the mate bond is reaching out to the alphas who were with you when you died? Because your mate is too far away? Eve whispered, her voice dry and cracked. Have you told your bond specialist any of this? Not yet. Isabel chewed on the inside of her cheek. I don't know who to trust. I mean, it's good to be careful. Eve hedged. She didn't look convinced, so Isabel began to take out her other contact while Eve continued. But it's not like you did anything super wrong. You could just tell them you were worried they would think one of the alphas was your mate. What is that? She was pointing at Isabel's other eye. It's the reason I'm being careful. Isabel replaced the lens while Eve stared at her, a vacant look creeping behind her eyes. Both your eyes changed, Eve said tonelessly. And if the officials find out, everything changes. Isabel stared hard at Eve, trying to convey the seriousness of the situation. As soon as I turn 21, I'm no longer the daughter of an icon. They can do whatever they want with me, but there's no way I get out of this without becoming a research project. It's bad enough that my mate wasn't there with me in the death phase, but I get the sense something like this has happened before, at least. That's why they were waiting for me to die in the hospital. They thought my mate was already dead. Maybe They wouldn't turn you into a science experiment? Eve sounded hesitant, her eyes darting to the door of the shower room like an official would bust inside and arrest her for doubting them. I mean, you're already different, but they're leaving you alone, right? No, they're just waiting and watching very closely. They seem to think this will all magically resolve through the side effects of prolonging a bond. And maybe they're right. I'm pretty sure I was inside his head last night. After she caught Eve up on everything else that had happened last night, and finally told her the bad news about Isabel's father stealing her away for spring break, they escaped the bathroom. I was planning something epic for spring break to get your popularity up. Eve was pouting, dragging her feet on the way back to their rooms. She paused before her door, fiddling with the handle. The whole mate finder campaign is pretty brilliant. She watched Isabel carefully. It just doesn't seem like your style. Wait until you see the photos, Isabel grumbled. Isabel checked her emails again as she made her way to the fitness center. She had received yet another temporary timetable while she ate breakfast with Eve that morning, telling her the location of the additional tutoring session West had added to her calendar. The fitness center was so massive that there were still areas of it she hadn't explored, and it was toward one of those sections that she walked now. An indoor climbing range, with two sections walled off from the rest of the range. One of the doors had a sign on it. Private session in progress. She knocked on the door, and West opened it a moment later, stepping aside to let her in.
Good, he said by way of greeting. You're dressed properly.
She glanced down at the tights and loose shirt that she had already put through one dance class and two practice sessions for the day. Is this still... She was unable to hold West's gaze, her eyes darting off to the side to avoid the weight of command he seemed to emanate without any real effort. A piano lesson, Professor?
I offered to mentor you onto the icon track. I thought I would start with piano, since you listed it as your backup specialty, but it's become apparent that you have a bigger problem that needs fixing first.
He picked up a harness, tossing it over to her. She caught it with shaking fingers, holding it uncertainly as he moved to stand before her.
Trust, he said.
I don't want to trust anyone, she blurted, adding quickly, Professor.
Harness,
he responded, a subtle demand riding his rough timber. It was almost a compulsion, without a hint of alpha voice. A very interesting and terrifying talent. She untangled the harness, her face flaming as she tried to figure out how to put it on.
Step through here,
he pointed without touching her or the harness.
Yes, right leg. Good. Now your other leg through here. Yes. Tighten these straps. Clip this around your waist. Perfect. Good girl. Tighten that strap. How does it feel?
She took a deep breath. Fine. Suffocating. He was wearing workout gear. She didn't notice until he was securing his own harness. He looked different. In his suit, he could be a bodyguard, or a suave agent from the old spy movies her mother used to watch. He would have to be the big Russian one, who liked to punch people and mostly communicated in grunts and diminishing glares. They would have to call him the Red Bear or something. In workout gear, he suddenly transformed into the handsome, all-American agent, trading his glower for an omniscient spark and dry charisma. It made her mind twitch with the need to see him in a full set of occupational costumes, like a boxed set of Alpha Ken dolls.
Are you listening, Carter?
West's voice cut through her thoughts with a sharp, barked edge, though his face was still lined in deliberate patience. Sorry, Professor. She shuffled to the wall where he was standing. He clicked a carabiner onto her harness, giving it a light tug that had her jerking forward another step nonetheless.
"Have you climbed before?"
He took a hold of the other end of the rope, standing back and finally giving her the mercy of turning his attention somewhere else. "My father sent me to a few indoor obstacle courses to prepare for Ironside Row," she answered. "They weren't strictly climbing." He nodded, his eyes turning back to her as he dug something out of his back pocket. A small handful of black cloth.
"I spoke to your dance teachers."
He closed his hand around the cloth, drawing her attention back to his face.
"They said you never partner up."
"Nobody ever wants to partner with me."
"Not that you ask them."
His lids grew lazy, his expression pointed.
"I've seen you dance. You're dynamic, highly energetic, incredibly athletic and strong. You're an acrobatic dancer, but you're small and graceful. You're a quintessential flyer, but you shy away from acrobatic partners. You're cutting your talent off at the knees, and you know it. If you can't learn to trust, you won't make it onto the icon track, let alone anywhere near the finish line."
"I'm not trying to get onto the icon."
"Don't."
He sighed, shaking his head.
"Don't be an insipid cliche of an icon's daughter, Carter. At what point do you think your objection to fame becomes ostentatious?"
Her lips slammed shut, her eyes narrowing. "It's not an act. Are the cameras on? I thought this lesson was private."
"They are off."
He flashed her the screen of his phone, showing 51:03:23 and counting, the minutes remaining in their lesson.
"And I didn't say it was an act. I'm asking you to gain some awareness. Every student here has traded their lives for a shot at what you were given from birth. You're undermining every settlement kid whose most far-reaching dream is to send a monthly Ironside stipend back to the settlement to put food and medicine in the hands of their family. They don't even dare to dream of the icon track. But if they were offered half the opportunities you had been..."
He let that hang in the air between them, like an accusation, as he shook out the length of black material from his fist.
"Turn around, princess."
The last word was whispered, his tone jaded, almost as if she wasn't supposed to hear it. He sounded as though he suspected he was wasting his time, and that hit harder than his words. She turned slowly, swallowing back tears from the lecture as the material suddenly flashed over her eyes, effectively blinding her. He securely tied it off behind her head, and she felt him hesitating behind her.
"I'm sure there's more to the story,"
he murmured in a light rumble.
"I'm sure you've been a victim your whole life. Truly a victim, not just acting like one. But you need to shake it off. Step out of that skin. An icon is a role model. You could actually help people. People who were victims just like you."
Dorm A is where good girls go to die. Everyone wanted her to change. And if she were honest with herself, she really wanted that as well. She just didn't know how to.
"We'll start here,"
West told her calmly, turning her in the right direction, lifting one of her hands to rest against the wall, his smoky vanilla scent digging right into her pores.
"From here on, you don't move an inch unless I tell you. Are you ready to trust, Carter?"
"Fuck no. Do I have a choice?"
"Professor."
"Do I have a choice, Professor?"
"That should have answered your question. Right hand up, two hand spans above your shoulder."
Alpha voice. Her arm jerked, puppet-like, racing to obey faster than it did even with her father's alpha voice. She winced, gripping the handhold and resting her face against the wall as her heartbeat tried to break through her ribs and unhook her from the rope.
"Left hand, just above your head."
Free from alpha voice this time, she took her sweet time reaching for the second handhold, and then the first foothold and then the second. Her arms were stiff, her muscles trembling in fear. Every time he asked her to release one of the grips or move, she had another mini panic attack all over again. She had no sense of time or distance, and her jaw was aching from how hard her teeth had been pressed together. West directed her calmly and patiently. After forcing her to take the first step, he kept his alpha voice at bay. But an even worse punishment came when she realized she had reached whatever height he had intended for her, and she now had to make her way back down again. As soon as her feet hit the cushioned floor, she collapsed, her head between her legs as she tore off the blindfold. West's voice was fucking echoing inside her head, her ears straining for a word of warning even now. He crouched before her, his powerful thighs bunching.
"It's up to you now."
She lifted her pale, sweaty face, meeting his hard eyes with confusion in her own. "What is?"
"Whether we continue this or not."
"Why me?" Her voice was hushed, and she forced the rest out before he could give her another lecture. "Ranks stick together. So you either don't believe anything will come of me, in which case you're wasting your time, or you think I could be an icon, in which case you're betraying your rank. You should be promoting your alphas over me." His hard lips shifted, but then he swiftly rearranged his face, hiding whatever emotion had just been about to show.
"I knew there was some pride in there somewhere,"
he grunted, standing and offering her his hand.
"But you left out a third option."
She watched his hand like she was waiting for it to suddenly transform into a claw and take a swipe at her, before she hesitantly placed her fingers in his. His power rolled over her hard, making her stumble as soon as he pulled her to her feet, her head reeling. He dropped her hand, turning toward the door.
"I believe you have it in you."
He opened the door and pulled down the private session in progress sign.
"What better way to monitor your progress than to ensure I'm the one guiding it?"
She spoke to the closed door, her voice low. "But you are enabling it, which means you don't really think I'm a threat at all." The truth was pretty clear. He was monitoring her, but not because he thought she could win. It was because she was getting close to his alphas. He thought she was a threat, but not to the game. She was a threat to his boys. Still, news of her getting special treatment from the alphas must have started to spread, because people now gave her a wide berth like she was Moses or Sato, but less scary. The other students didn't quite know how to treat her anymore. Even her dorm room remained suspiciously untouched. Even Eve was getting some funny looks as she accompanied Isabel to her piano lesson. "So, Reed is taking over from Professor West for this one?" Eve asked, nodding toward the door that already had a private sign stuck to the outside. "I think so." Isabel paused outside the door. "But these lessons always seem to be the complete opposite of what I expect, so who knows?" Eve chuckled, giving the door a wary look. "Good luck!" Steeling herself, Isabel knocked and opened the door, sticking her head inside. Reed was already sitting there, playing the beautiful grand piano that she hadn't had a chance to explore the week before.
"Come in,"
he muttered, his eyes never leaving the keys. She stepped inside and was about to shut the door when a cameraman suddenly appeared out of nowhere, his assistant pushing the door wide. Isabel pretended to ignore them, scattering away from the door and approaching the piano. Reed stiffened, his fingers falling from the keys, a short sigh slipping out of his mouth. He didn't need to look to know their lesson was no longer private.
"Sit,"
he commanded, edging off the stool and hovering beside it.
"I don't care what you play, just play something."
Reed's presence wasn't quite as stifling as West's, but with the additional crew members, she was still no less relaxed. Her fingers were stiff, her tongue thick enough to choke on as she pulled her heavy hands up to the keys. Reed curved himself around her back, his hands notched against the piano, caging her in. A haze of cloves and wood smoke settled around her, her skin tingling. She never would have guessed that she would take comfort from Reed, but the baffling effect was undeniable. Some of the tension lifted from her limbs, her back straightening until she could feel the brush of his arms around her. A weight she hadn't even realized she had been carrying around unlocked with a heavy groan from around her heart, and she drew her first full breath since waking up in Killian's bed the other morning. None of it made sense, especially the fact that Reed seemed to know he would have that effect on her. "Play, Carter." He pulled back, and she did, her fingers drifting to the starting notes, pressing down without the panic. It wasn't smooth, not at first. She had to work to block out the disjointed sounds of her memory, the vision of the keys shifting in and out of focus as her father's fingers constricted against her throat. She had to swallow past the rasp of ghostly pain. She played Iruma and reminded herself that she could breathe. She drifted into Jan Tiersen and convinced herself she was safe. She jumped from Chopin to Avicii, then Satie and Beethoven. She had no idea how long she played for, because once she started, it was hard to stop. She closed her eyes and her muscles took over, accompanied only by that smoky, smoldering fragrance. It was so unlike Reed, yet it suited him perfectly. She could imagine him standing by a fireplace, lighting a candle before settling into a chair to read a book, his reading glasses propped onto the edge of his nose. She could imagine herself there, too, curled up on a fluffy rug, her head on a pillow, her eyes fixed to the flames, lulled by cinnamon and cloves as warm hands bundled her up, lifting her from the floor and resettling her in his lap, his book falling open on her thigh, his voice softly rumbling as he began to read out loud. She stopped playing, the song ending on a soft sound to accompany the sigh that slipped from her lips, even as a small part of her brain rioted. The vision had felt a little too real. She scrambled off the piano bench, shooting Reed a suspicious look. He was staring back at her, his eyebrows dipped, little furrows appearing between them. "You need to work on your pacing." His voice was pitched low, husky. He cleared his throat. "And one more thing." He pulled out his phone, his fingers flying across the screen. Her own device vibrated with the message, and she yanked it out, opening the chat. "Unknown. It's so glaringly obvious it's painful. Consider this my initiation task. Figure out what we're hiding. I'm ready to graduate from these childish games." She saved his number, watching as he left the room without another word. The camera crept toward her phone, and she quickly turned off the screen, forcing a secret smile. "Just texted me to tell me I'll never be as good as him," she lied, pretending she was talking to herself as she rolled her eyes and followed him out of the room. As soon as she was clear of the building, she replied to his message. "Isabel, is it something you're hiding from me, or from..."
"Reed, from you, from them, from ourselves. That's your first and only hint. We carry a lot of secrets, and if you're going to be one of us, you need to be clever enough to keep them all in line. So prove your cleverness, Carter."
"Prove this, prove that," she grumbled, shoving the phone back into her pocket, even though a little thrill raced through her. Unlike Moses and Nico's tasks, this one was a riddle, an invitation to dive into the secrets of the Alphas the way she was already craving to do, and figure out what nobody else had been able to. Chapter 13. Fake Bastards. When Isabel pushed into the family center the next day, she was surprised to find Ashford sitting at one of the empty tables. His long legs were stretched out beneath the table, his head jerking up like he had been napping as the door fell closed behind her.
"Carter,"
he drawled, standing and unfurling his tall form.
"Ready for your appointment?"
She stared at him. "How do you know..."
"Really?"
he smirked, interrupting.
"I'm psychic, doll."
"Right." She cast him a confused look and then moved to the elevator. He followed. "What are you doing?" she asked.
"Coming with you."
He pressed the button to call the elevator.
"No,"
she drew the word out slowly. "You're not." The doors opened, and he ushered her in, advancing on her with his arms wide, confident that she would scramble out of his reach and right into the elevator, which she did. He pressed the correct floor and leaned against the wall, crossing his arms. "Ashford," she folded her arms, "what the fuck are you doing?" He rolled his lower lip between his teeth, looking like he was smiling at her harsh tone.
"Moral support," he claimed easily, even though it was a bold-faced lie.
"I don't need moral Ashford!" He was striding from the elevator, knocking on the door to the office she met with Teak and Charlie in. Teak opened the door, her brows inching up at the vision of Ashford, who had reached for Isabel in the last second and was now dragging her against his side.
"Kean Ashford!"
He stuck his free hand out to Teak, the other still anchored heavily to Isabel's hip.
"One of Carter's friends. She was nice enough to let me hijack her session for a few minutes."
"Okay." Teak recovered smoothly, arranging a polite smile to her face as she stood aside, waving for Isabel and Ashford to enter.
Kean dragged the Sigma into the room, and because there was only one chair, he dropped her into it, enjoying the little surprised puff of air that escaped her.
He perched on the arm, his hand landing over the top of her head. He stroked her hair as he focused on the third woman in the room.
Indian American, if he had to guess. She had a silver beta ring, stark against inky eyes. She cocked a pierced brow at him. "Charlie," she introduced herself. "We weren't expecting you, Mr. Ashford."
"Please."
He showed her all his teeth.
"My dad is Mr. Ashford."
She looked like she wanted to smirk at him, but instead she arranged a professional expression onto her face, turning to share a look with Annalise Teak, the reason he was here.
"To what do we owe the pleasure, Ashford?"
Teak skipped right to the point, not buying his supportive friend act for a second.
Still, he kept petting the Sigma's hair. It was soft and silky, and the touch seemed to quiet her until she was content enough to sit back and wait to see what he had planned. Her scent matured from the crushed cherry he knew well to something softer, subtler. Her head tilted back a little, just the smallest fraction, like she was unconsciously preening under his touch.
Of course she was. They were intrinsically tied together by the soul. She was alive because of him. Well, him and the others. They were the only people who could give her comfort now.
"Now that you mention it, I do have a question."
He twisted a lock of strawberry blonde hair between his thumb and forefinger, his attention fixed on Teak.
"Have you ever heard of a Sigma speaking to the dead?"
Carter grew eerily still, a small hand whipping up to smooth her hair out of his grip. He leaned over her, planting his elbow against the back of her chair and using his fist to prop up his head. Teak and Charlie went just as still, sharing another quick look.
"Interesting."
He straightened, looking between them.
"You have."
Why do you ask?
Teek sat down, crossing her legs, leveling him with a cool stare.
You're an official, and a gifted, and a Sigma.
Kian shrugged lightly.
There's no better person in the world to ask, in my opinion.
I didn't ask why me.
Teek narrowed her eyes.
I asked why you would ask such a question.
Because I don't do well with mysteries.
He suddenly grew serious.
I want answers, and I realized I won't get them from the Sigma until she has them herself.
Carter suddenly shot to her feet, spinning in a cloud of sunbeam hair and starlight and gold eyes, glittering with fury.
Get out!
She pointed with a shaky finger to the door.
So cute. She looked like she was ready to strangle him, even though she probably couldn't strangle a raggedy toy.
It almost made him want to invite her to try.
Sit down,
he countered, biting back his alpha voice.
I wouldn't put you at risk, Isabel.
That made her pause, a brief flash of confusion butting up against her anger. She must have felt his frustration, because her hand was rubbing absently over her chest. She fell back into the chair, sullenly, and tilted her head up to cast a barely tolerant expression over him.
The cards were clear,
he told her, trying to make his voice sound more kind, more empathetic.
These two are your allies. They won't betray you to anyone.
Not even the officials. He left that part unspoken. Teek made a sound of indignation, while Charlie hid another smile.
Liaising between Isabel and the OGGB is my job,
Teek announced, a hint of gravel in her words.
They have her best interests at heart. It would be impossible to betray her to them.
He rolled his eyes.
Bullshit.
The cards didn't say they were his allies, but they were definitely Isabel's, even if they didn't realize it yet.
You have a choice right now. Isabel can speak to the dead. Now, tell me, will you be liaising that information?
Teek stiffened, turning wide eyes to Carter. Her lips were stiff. She didn't want to ask. She didn't want to be put in the position of having to choose between the little Sigma, who probably reminded her far too much of herself, or the officials, who quite literally held her life in their hands. But she would choose Carter. The cards were clear on that. And Carter really needed someone on her side.
Isabel stayed silent, the session well and truly torn out of her control by this point. The longer Teek looked at her, the more the understanding seemed to settle over the other woman's face. Teek consulted her notes, cleared her throat, and then peered at Charlie from beneath her lashes, before finally turning back to Isabel and Ashford.
No, she whispered, a pallor falling over her skin.
I won't be passing this information on.
But you've heard of it happening before,
Ashford pressed. Isabel wanted to kick him, or hug him, or sit back and let him ask all the questions she never would have had the guts to ask in a million years.
They questioned me quite extensively about it when I applied to be their bond specialist,
Teek answered stiffly.
I don't have any personal experience with it, but it's clearly happened before. When they put Charlie through her clearance course, they asked her if she suspected I might have developed that particular anomaly. It must only pertain to Sigmas.
But you have theories,
Ashford pressed, petting Isabel's head again. She let him, even though Charlie was watching them closely. Ashford was a touchy person. It probably said as much in his file. Teek sighed, tossing aside her notes and leaning forward.
Isabel, just tell it to me straight. Are you hearing voices? Seeing things?
Isabel nodded stiffly, too scared to utter the words aloud. How often? Teak fell back against the chair like she couldn't really believe it. I think when I'm really scared, Isabel whispered. At first it was just my mother's voice. Then I started seeing her. Then, she glanced up at Ashford.
Then she heard my mother,
Ashford supplied calmly.
Saying something only my mother would say. Something only my mother would say after her death, if that makes sense.
It doesn't, Charlie provided.
And the least you could do is spill your secrets after forcing Isabel to spill hers.
Isabel decided then and there that she really liked Charlie.
My mother stole one of the guard's cars and tried to drive it off a cliff with me in the passenger seat.
Ashford was rigid, his agony pressing against Isabel's chest, making it hard for her to breathe comfortably.
She had a change of heart and tried to hit the brakes, but it was too late. We hung off the edge for 15 minutes while she begged me to climb out the window. I was 8. As soon as I was out, she started to say something, but the car tipped, and she disappeared. I think she was trying to apologize.
Isabel's head hung low, remembering the pain in the voice that had spoken to her while Ashford and her were on the rooftop. I'm sorry. Isabel repeated the words on a whisper. She said she was sorry.
I know.
He resumed stroking her hair, his hands steady. But Teak was like Isabel. She could sense the agony emanating from him in waves.
I'm sorry.
Teak frowned, a spark of genuine sorrow in her eyes.
I also saw Sato's dad, I think.
Isabel forced the words out.
Oscar's dad?
Ashford's voice turned sharp.
While Oscar was there?
Isabel nodded. He was something else.
Hmm.
Ashford stopped touching her, his posture suddenly guarded.
So what do you think?
He asked Teak.
I think it's highly irregular that you're so invested,
Teak answered.
You and the other alphas. I think it's suspicious that West and Easton both agreed to tutor her, and I don't think it makes any sense for all of you to show so much interest in her.
But,
she flicked her attention to Isabel,
you're like a vault. It's incredibly difficult to get information out of you, so maybe that's it. Discretion is an invaluable attribute around here.
She has other attributes.
Ashford sounded like he was holding back a laugh. Charlie rolled her eyes.
I met an alpha or two during my time at Ironside, she said calmly. I was even friends with one of them for a time. She explained how alphas get territorial, how they form pack-like structures when too many of them are together in one place. And she told me how competitive it gets. She emphasized that most of all. I would caution you against turning Carter into a game just because Theodore Kane is interested in her. She has a mate. That is not something to be messed with.
Are we messing with it?
Ashford didn't even skip a beat.
Or are we helping ease the ache of a mate who can't even be bothered to show their face? I think she gains a great deal of comfort from us. We're the only ones who bother to give her any, after all.
I think this is getting off topic, Isabel said pointedly. It's finally getting on topic.
Charlie rolled her eyes, but she softened it with an understanding smile.
If the alphas are helping, then I'll stop butting in. I know how they are.
Isabel felt her lips pulling up at the corners. Finally, someone who didn't fall at the feet of the great and mighty alphas.
I think we can help.
Ashford's voice turned to steel.
Not by violating her bond, but by respecting there is one. One which is being ignored.
We have used surrogates before, Teak mused, considering him slowly.
Where bondmates have died or been away for extended periods of time. It does ease the side effects. Great.
Ashford didn't sound thrilled, but he kept pushing ahead.
So what can I do?
Hold up. What? Why you? Isabel interrupted.
Because I'm the one who gatecrashed your session.
He cut her a tight smile.
In return, I'm offering to help.
He didn't particularly look like he wanted to help, but she couldn't think of anyone invested enough in her life to force him to help. Except, perhaps, her father. But Ashford was also an alpha, and he didn't seem like the sort to be easily pushed around.
Touching helps.
Teak was already writing a list.
Physical comfort. Sleeping beside a warm body, anticipating her needs like a real mate. Presence, pampering. In the half-bonded states, most anchors will spoil their tethers, easing the trauma of their recent death and making them feel welcome in this world. It can be a difficult thing for the mind to accept, coming back from the dead. Tactile things that help to ground her soul to the real world, like feeding her or making her living space more inviting.
Isabel scoffed quietly.
I don't see Isabel easily accepting any of that,
Teak continued, a small smile twitching over her lips as she continued to write.
So I suppose your biggest challenge would be finding ways to ease her half-bonded state that she will actually allow.
She tore the page out of her notebook, handing it to Ashford.
I'll inform the officials that you've offered to be a surrogate.
Ashford made a humming sound, tucking the note away.
As your maid has already pointed out, we alphas get a little competitive.
I'll inform the officials that several of you may be surrogating.
Teak corrected, looking like she was suppressing a small chuckle.
Will I get a straight answer if I ask why? Theo,
Isabel answered, her cheeks flooding with color.
They think we're too close. The others like to, monitor us. Ah.
Understanding sparked in both Teak and Charlie's eyes, along with a heavy dose of amusement.
Poor Theodore,
Charlie muttered.
Yes, yes, poor Theodore.
Ashford agreed, standing and moving to the door.
Thanks for the session, ladies. Was a pleasure. Come on, doll. I'll hold your hand all the way to your next obligation like a good fake mate.
Isabel stood, but ignored his hand, quietly thanking Teak and Charlie before shouldering past him. He must have hung back to say something, because she managed to get the elevator to herself. But he caught up to her soon after she hit the pathway leading from the family center. He captured her hand, his fingers pushing between hers. Tingles immediately shot up her arm, and she tried to jerk it free. He held tighter, twisting their hands across her front as he dropped his arm over her shoulders, anchoring her into his side.
If Theo liked me so much,
he laughed, cutting her off.
If, right.
He would have kissed me first,
she finished. Ashford stalled, his eyes fixing to a point on the path ahead.
Say what now?
The game? Spin the bottle?
She peeked up at him, trying to ignore that incredible sunshine and seawater scent that clung to his skin and hair. He smelled like a god of the seas, just as much as he looked like one. Isabel wasn't one of those people who thought the gifted were descendants of old gods, but it was almost easy to entertain the thought when she recalled Ashford rising from the water of Alpha Lake, slicking his golden hair back from his face as water ran in rivulets from his perfectly carved body. They were walking again, Ashford keeping silent.
Maybe I'm wrong,
he eventually said, a slow smile creeping over his face.
It happens. What are your plans for spring break?
Mate finder tour,
she sighed out. I'll be visiting all the settlements on a PR tour with my father and his team.
Ah,
he scoffed.
The wedding dress.
Had he seen the posters already? She winced, opting not to answer. He was steering her toward the fitness center as though he had a copy of her schedule.
What's the plan?
He pushed.
The city settlements first and then the outreach ones?
No,
There's too many to do it that way. It has to be based off their location. We're starting with the Hudson settlement and ending at the Mojave settlement.
Interesting. So you're visiting all 15, then?
She nodded, trying to ignore the ball of lead in her stomach.
How macabre,
he surmised. She snorted. Nobody else seems to think so. The PR team thinks it's brilliantly romantic, a real Cinderella story. I'm Prince Charming, of course.
Of course.
Ashford, call me Kian. Why would I do that?
Why should you call me by my name?
He opened the door to the practice room she had booked without her making any sort of indication that it was the right one. She slid past him, frowning when he invited himself inside and closed the door, leaning back against it with his arms crossed. Why are we talking like we're friends? She asked. A laugh rumbled out of him, and his arms relaxed, falling to his sides.
I like physical contact too, you know.
She smirked. I know.
Well, it's hard to get close to people in this godforsaken environment. People either want to use me for screen time, or in the hopes they can hitch their ride to an icon. And you've met my friends. They're not very cuddly.
Killian?
Killian is part of the problem,
he spat, squinting at her.
I'm so fucking jealous that he gets to be all over you with no strings attached. I just swindled a similar deal.
Careful, she whispered, when all other words failed. They'll make you get a fake girlfriend. He only smirked, raising his voice.
Stop trying to reject your surrogate mate. I'm here as long as you need me. As long as you only need me for the next...
He pulled out his phone.
Well, tonight, I guess. The bus has come to take everyone back to the settlements for break early in the morning.
You're going home? She asked, feeling a strange pang of anxiety.
Yes.
He smiled, but it was tight.
Are you going to dance?
Are you going to watch?
Tempting, but no. The guys have been texting me. Gabriel gets antsy when I leave it up to the last minute to pack.
He opened his arms for a hug.
Will this tide you over?
She stared at the open, inviting space, holding her breath so that she wouldn't breathe him in. Do I look like I'm struggling? She tried to sound droll, but her voice was a squeak.
Pretty much always,
he answered, wiggling his fingers at her. I feel fine, she promised.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
He surged forward, wrapping one arm around her back and the other around her thighs, and then he hoisted her up, her whole body slapping along the front of his, the breath leaving her chest in a whoosh.
You're impossible, he grumbled. Just relax and accept the hug.
Easier said than done. Ashford, Kian, didn't have a very relaxing presence. His scent clogged up her brain, filling her with images of slow-rolling waves crashing against his bare, muscled back. She could almost taste it. Salt and skin. Heat. His face nudged into her neck, his chest filling with a deep, searching breath. It vibrated out on a groan.
Okay, wow. Syrup on skin. That's quite a smell, Carter.
Isabel, she grumbled, if we're going to be friends. His arms tightened, his chest still vibrating.
I'm thinking very unfriendly thoughts.
Oh my God, put me down! She hit his shoulder, and he obliged, laughing. He pushed a few messy locks of golden hair out of his face.
See you around, cherries.
She quickly locked the door behind him, her face flaming bright red. She really didn't want to admit it, but her body felt lighter after the hug, her limbs more languid, though her chest tightened the minute she was alone. It was difficult to tell which emotions were from the strain of her half-formed bond and what was simple anxiety for the upcoming settlement tour. So she bundled it all to the back of her mind as she began to dance. Several hours of practice later, she managed to grab some alone time with Eve before a group of Omegas descended to drag her friend off to dinner.
"See you at GMS!"
Eve called, grinning as she skipped out of the room. The Green Mountain Settlement, Vermont. Eve had come from one of the outreach settlements. It was the 9th stop on Isabel's tour. Also, Killian's stop. She skulked back to her room, packed her bags, and then sat on her makeshift bed, staring at the wall. That panicky feeling was rising again, and the harder she tried to ignore it, the more insistent it became. She didn't want to leave. 10 days seemed unreasonably like a lifetime. She wasn't sure how long she could go without... without who? She frowned, scrubbing her hands over her face. It seemed impossible, but Reed had said it was obvious. So glaringly obvious it's painful. And if she could use contacts to cover up her eyes, then... No. She laughed at herself, falling back and staring up at the ceiling. Except... No! She said again, a little more forcefully this time, as her heart beat faster and faster. She did keep teleporting to Dorm A, and even now she was itching to walk over there. It was an effort to stay where she was, to not reach for her phone to text one of them. She wasn't sure who, exactly, just that her mind kept drifting back to Dorm A. Fuck! She was mated to one of those asshole alphas, and they were collectively hiding it from her. Even Theodore. Even Killian. And Kian, that fake bastard. With a small growl, she jumped up, stalking all the way outside. She needed a plan, but her mind was wiped clean of everything except anger. Her phone vibrated in her hand, and she furiously swiped at the screen. Theodore, you better not leave without saying goodbye. She pulled up short, mulling over the message, and hands suddenly landed over her shoulders, darkness shrouding her vision, the thick black cloud cutting out the surrounding lights. Not this again. Couldn't let you leave without a little send-off celebration. A voice purred into her ear as several sets of hands restrained her. Something was pressed into her mouth, choking off her scream. We heard about your little Cinderella campaign, but how will you land a pretty prince if your face is all fucked up? That didn't sound good. She struck out with her arms and legs, trying to twist out of their hold and land hits wherever she could. A few people grunted, the grip on her arms slipping, but there were too many of them, and they managed to drag her into a nearby building, shoving her up against a stone wall. One of them immediately punched her hard in the stomach, making her double over and clutch herself. They kicked at her until she fell to the ground. A boot made contact with her nose, and wet warmth gushed over her face. She stopped trying to fight, curling into a ball and wrapping her arms around her head. She choked back all sound, taking the beating as silently as she could. So the alarm that suddenly rang around them was piercingly loud in comparison. Saved by the bell, bitch! One last kick, and footsteps pounded away from her, a door falling shut. The dark cloud lifted, and a small form crouched beside Isabel, hands reaching around the back of her head to untie the gag shoved into her mouth. Thanks. Isabel spit out blood, pulling up to a sitting position and falling back against the wall as the alarm continued to shriek through the stairwell. Eve? I heard them talking about it on the way to dinner, Eve said, her mouth a firm, angry line. I tripped the alarm. Are you okay?
Who was it?
Isabel asked, ignoring the other question. She wasn't sure if she could stand.
A group of Omegas and Betas. I'll help you file a report. I know all their names. Come on, let's get you to the medical center.
It was slow going, and Isabel was pretty sure one of her ribs was cracked. But Eve took her weight and patiently helped her every step of the way, falling quiet after Isabel's almost violent reaction to the question of whether Eve should call Theodore to help. It wasn't until several hours later, when she was lying in a hospital bed, staring out at the night sky through the tall window, that she really allowed herself to go through her memories of the day she woke up in Dorm A and made her way to a room just like this one. She had waited, back then, with Eve, her only visitor. She had waited to find out if she would die without a mate. When all the while, her mate had been lying to her, hiding from her. She had always known the Alphas were playing their own game at Ironside. But the length they had gone to in order to frame the entire narrative was shocking. They weren't just controlling what the officials saw. They were controlling what she saw. And this was her fucking life. She wanted to be angry. She was angry. But there was a tiny seed of doubt in the back of her mind, whispering that Killian and Theodore wouldn't lie to her without a good reason. That seed sprouted, growing thin, unsteady branches. Reed had told her they were hiding something, and had even challenged her to figure it out. He had said they were hiding it from themselves as much as they were hiding it from her. She supposed all the answers rested with the who and not the why. Which one of them was her mate? What was so special about him that the others would all protect him from her?
Chapter 14. Oski.
There we go, all better.
The makeup artist, Serena, stepped out of the way of the mirror, tapping her brush to expel any excess powder. Isabel turned her face from side to side. It was clear that she was swollen, but the glittering dark eyeshadow and pristine contouring helped to hide her bruises. Nothing could hide her limp, but they had to choose their battles.
Champagne?
Serena offered. Again, as the air hostess passed through the center of the plane with another tray. Isabel shook her head, watching as her father held up his finger for another glass. The private plane had several rows of comfortable seating, but it was growing excruciating all the same. Every time she tried to switch positions, a sharp bolt of pain traveled simultaneously down her tailbone and through her ribs. She checked the time on her phone, counting down the minutes until she could take another dose of painkillers as Cesar Cooper broke away from the bubble of conversation surrounding her father, moving to the empty chair opposite Isabel.
"You look lovely,"
he told her, patting her knee encouragingly. She pulled her leg back, but he didn't seem to notice.
"We'll be landing in the private airfield in New York soon, and then it's a short drive to the settlement. We've got a limo for you, of course. The rest of us will come separately, since the Ironside crew want to shadow you. Did you look over the schedule?"
She had spent a sleepless night in the hospital, glaring daggers through the emailed schedule, fuming over what the Alphas had done to her and planning her revenge. The beating she had received was nothing compared to knowing her mate had been beside her all this time, lying to her. She still had no idea who it was, but she would be visiting each of their settlements, and after a conversation with her father over breakfast in her hospital room, she had found out exactly which settlement each of them were from. He cared far more about her apparent scheming than the fact that she had been dragged into a stairwell and assaulted. He had given her that, "You're finally starting to act like my daughter," look again, after patting her shoulder and telling her that jealousy was a given at Ironside. It was actually a good sign. She had turned the conversation quickly back to the schedule to avoid snapping at him or bursting into tears. Theodore and Moses were in Hudson, her first stop. Sado was in the Ozark Mountains, the third stop. Then the Green Mountains for Killian and the protected Redwood Settlement region for Nico, stops 9 and 10. Reed and Spade were at number 12, Piney Woods. Then to Rock River Valley for Kian and Easton's home settlement, the San Bernardino Mountains. Finally, her last stop was the Mojave Desert, where West was from. Since they only had 10 days to visit 15 settlements, she had requested to prioritize the first 8 of the Alpha stops, and her father was happy to oblige, thinking she was planning some way to use the Alphas to create drama on her tour.
Well, let's just go over it again, then.
Cooper drew out his tablet when it seemed like Isabel wasn't going to answer him.
They've prepared a spot for you to receive visitors in each of the settlements, so as soon as you arrive, we'll invite the lucky applicants in to meet with you. Your father has requested that the following Alphas be rounded up and added to the lineup, as you requested. The Kane twins, Elijah Reed, Gabriel Spade, Killian Gray, Nico Hart, Kian Ashford, and Oscar Sado. We'll make sure they're first in line, so you can spend as much time on them as you would like.
Isabel nodded, fiddling nervously with her phone. Theodore and Killian had both tried messaging and calling her before she left. Thankfully, they didn't think to check the hospital.
We asked the bond specialist to prepare some interview questions for you, but she suggested you just look at their eye color,
Cooper was saying. What if they're wearing contacts? She asked quietly. Those gifted eyes places are really popular online. It's easy to recreate even the most unique eye colors with rank rings.
We're going to the settlements.
Cooper rolled his eyes.
The gifted can't afford such things.
Right. Isabel flushed, looking down into her lap before forcing her head back up again. Let's just say they could, though. What then?
I'm not a bond specialist, darling.
He reached out, grabbing her hands. His were clammy, a little sweaty. She resisted the urge to jerk hers away as his thumbs swiped against her skin.
You could always touch them.
He released her hands when she tugged them, and she resisted wiping them against the seat until he was returning to his own spot for landing. She separated from the rest of her father's posse when they touched down, sliding into a limo with the film crew from Ironside, who all spoke to each other as though she was invisible. To pass the time, she pulled out her phone and scrolled through Twitter, reading the comments on the official Mate Finder Tour announcement made by Ironside. At the Witching Hour.
There are posters of Carter all over my settlement. Look what happens when I trace the golden ratio over her face. Is she perfect? Hashtag perfect beauty. Hashtag golden ratio. Hashtag mate finder. Hashtag finding Carter.
At foodie finds.
Loving all the drama and suspense. The Kane twins came home just for the hashtag mate finder tour. First stop is Hudson. Might as well just end it here. Heh. Hashtag look no further. Hashtag finding Carter. Hashtag team Theodore.
At artistic visions.
Is it just me, or does Carter have some sort of connection to every Alpha at Ironside? Gonna be a long tour. $100 says they don't let her talk to anyone else. Hashtag MateFinder Tour. Hashtag Justice for the Professors. Hashtag Finding Carter.
At Screen Queens.
At Isabel Carter turned 18 this year, so she shouldn't be getting all these special privileges anymore. Bron Carter needs to stay in his lane and stick to the rules. At OGGB Official, what's the deal? Hashtag police the gifted. Hashtag OGGB. Hashtag gifted behaving badly. Hashtag settlements gone wild. Hashtag finding Carter.
At Genius Twins Speedy. R.E. at Screen Queens.
The age of independence is 21, idiot.
At Fandom Fanatic.
Carter wants attention, not a mate. Check out this before and after picture. Proof of plastic surgery. Maybe plastic interferes with the magic. Hashtag MateFinder Tour. Hashtag Finding Carter.
At Mrs. Kane, 98. Theodore looks at Carter the same way my Labrador looks at cheese, and I'm so here for it.
Hashtag MateFinder Tour. Hashtag Finding Carter. Hashtag Justice for Theo.
At Traveling Avery. R.E. at Mrs. Kane, 98.
I'm willing to bet my house on Sato. Haven't heard a thing he's said all season because his abs are so distracting. If they aren't showing on screen, I stare at a screenshot of them on my phone instead.
At Olivia Films Things, R.E. at Mrs. Kane, 98. Reed is the kind of daddy that would treat you right, and I'm here for it. Hashtag justice for Reed.
At Emma Garcia, 12. R.E. at Mrs. Kane, 98.
What about Spade? He could ignore me all day, and the second he says my name, I'ma still be like, yes, Spatty.
At CA Official, R.E. at Mrs. Kane, 98.
As the official owner of Ashford's online fan page, I'm shocked and appalled. There's only one true daddy.
At Screen Savvy,